Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
A happy Friday to you, but an unhappy Friday for one team in the NBA. Plus a look ahead to Week 16. All that and more coming up here on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Fresh off of a three-week stint in the UK, back in the States is one Bucky Brooks. Bucky, happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Glad to have you back in the US of A.
Hey, thanks so much for the nice warm welcome.
It's the welcome back. It's the welcome back. Well, Bucky's wife has had to do all the Christmas stuff for his family. He was in the UK doing a lot of NFL stuff, but we'll talk NFL. Trust me, we will. So much to get to in the next 3 hours. Glad to have you with us. In 20 minutes, you don't want to miss it. Kyle Whittingham, head coach of the Utah Utes, will be joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show. But while there's NFL to talk about in college football, we have to start in the NBA because last night, the Miami Heat down the Houston Rockets 101-99, but it has nothing to do with the outcome of last night, the biggest story. The biggest story is Chris Paul leaves the game with a hamstring injury, and it's an injury that we've seen before with Chris Paul, and the Houston Rockets now severely hampered without their point guard who suffered the injury last night in Miami. It's an amazing turn of events for everyone in the Houston Rockets organization, Bucky, but not for anybody else throughout the NBA or who watched the NBA, because we saw this coming. This was something that we saw in the Western Conference Finals last season in Game 5 against the Golden State Warriors. So when Chris Paul goes down with a hamstring injury last night in Miami, it is a shock to no one except seemingly the Houston Rockets organization.
Yeah, I mean, like here's what happens when you are dealing with older players. And part of the, you know, what you worry about is when guys get into their 30s, and particularly when they get 34, 35 years old, the injuries tend to happen just because of the wear and tear issue. And so when the Rockets made a decision to sign Chris Paul to a long-term deal, they had to know that this was part of the equation. And what you try and do is you try and manage their minutes, try and make sure that you get your star players, your older players, to the finish line as healthy as you possibly can. And I mean, I think all of us knew that, particularly being in L.A., having watched him up and down with the Clippers, the numerous injuries that he suffered, they should have been prepared to know that he is going to miss time. He is going to be a guy that is in and out of the lineup, and you have to have a backup plan. And so the surprise that they may express to me is really shocking, because they should have known that with an older player, this is some of the stuff that you get when they already have a history.
Well, that's the part that gets me, is when you looked at the Houston Rockets offseason, we pointed a lot to the loss of Trevor Ariza, and we pointed to their pursuit of Carmelo Anthony. But when you really look at the Houston Rockets, it was a Chris Paul injury that prevented that team from the NBA Finals. And what do you try to do? You try to do whatever you can to make sure that you don't fall short in that same way. And what do the Houston Rockets do? Instead of addressing the point guard position or trying to figure out another way to navigate, where you still have one of the top five players in the NBA on your team, the reigning MVP, you have to figure out a way to surround him with pieces that allow you to get to that point. And so what they do is they put every single one of their eggs in a basket, and it's not even eggs from the 2018-2019 season. It's for the next 3 years, because you re-up with Chris Paul on a contract for 4 years that was really basically for this season. Mm-hmm. That's what this was all about. And now to see this, and this isn't whether Chris Paul's out 2 games, 4 games, or a month. The point is this isn't getting better. And that's why it's so difficult for me to try to take a look at the Houston Rockets and say, how did you not see this coming? Everybody saw this coming with Chris Paul. I understand that you're at the doorstep, but if you're a Daryl Morey or if you're the Houston Rockets organization, you've got to figure out a way to make it work around James Harden, and they failed to do that using scotch tape to try to put together Chris Paul and bring in Carmelo Anthony. It's just it's been an awful offseason for the Houston Rockets. It translated into the regular season, and now they are where they are and not even a guaranteed bet to make the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, this has gone about as bad as it can go for a team that was very, very close to, man, getting to the title, winning a title a season ago. And so they tried to bring it back, try to keep the gang together as much as they could. Chris Paul had some of the other veterans stay. But, look, when you take chances on older players, these are some of the things that you have. And when you go and you look at people's injury history and you look at the things that he's had to deal with for the majority of his career, he has been a guy that has always missed some time throughout the course of the season. And so that typically doesn't change. You don't get healthier as you get older. Your body begins to break down. And so for them to not have a plan, to not know what they were dealing with, yeah, that's on Daryl Morey. That's on the front office for not really making a sound decision. But they really didn't have a choice, because when they brought him on a season ago, it was either you're going to do it for a one-year deal or you're going to lock in and pay him big money. So they were kind of between a rock and a hard place, and this is where they are right now.
Do you think that they had any belief that Chris Paul could stay healthy this season? Or do you think it was just a hope? Because that's it to me. Like, I understand, like, you're so close to the top of the mountain. You were two games away from knocking off the Golden State Warrior, one game away. They just needed one win in the final two of that series. But is it hoping? Is it wishing? Did they think that this was a legitimate plan?
They were hoping that he could do it. I mean,
that's the problem.
We're looking at right now on the screen, they have how much he's making by age. 35.7 at 33, 38.5 at 34. Then it goes over $40 million at 35 and 36. That's unbelievable money for an older player and a player who has had his history. I love him as a player, but I also know that, look, he's a smaller guy, and sometimes in the league, be it NBA or the NFL, when you're dealing with smaller guys, some of these injuries happen from the banging, the wear and tear, and the stress that he's put on his body to compete against bigger, faster guys.
There's another part of this that makes me just scratch my head, because Daryl Morey was thought of and is thought of as one of the better GMs in the NBA. And to put a team together and do so in a creative fashion has been one of his strong suits. There aren't NBA GMs. If you know their name, you know that they're doing something, whether it be good or bad, and you know who Daryl Morey is, and Daryl Morey has put something together in Houston. What is bothersome to me is, for a guy who is extremely intelligent and has done different things, was they went the easy way out, because they were so close, and they thought, you know what, if we could just get by with this, if he could just stay healthy, and if we add Carmelo Anthony, that's going to be enough. As long as we have this core together, everything is going to be the same. And I would expect someone of the Houston Rockets to be able to say, if you're Daryl Morey's caliber, you know what? We don't want to pay Chris Paul $160 million over 4 years, because we know in those latter couple of years, even though we are so close, be creative in how you are shaping your team around James Harden. And it seems that the Rockets just ended up taking the easy way out, because optics wise, it would have looked awful. If you're like, we don't want to pay Chris Paul, even though we were one game away, but it was the smart decision. Maybe with the fans, it would have been bad. I think we all understood Chris Paul's health. I just expected almost more from Daryl Morey instead of just letting Trevor Ariza go.
The only thing that makes it tough, you were so close a year ago, and you saw on the floor the chemistry and connection that Chris Paul and James Harden had, like the yin and the yang between both guys that could take it off the dribble, that could create opportunities for others. The Rockets were a force last year with these guys kind of playing as 1A, 1B. And so when you have a coach and Mike D'Antoni who is like, look, these guys are perfect fits for my system. We have been able to score a lot of points. We kind of run people out of the gym. You can see where they're like, look, I know this probably isn't the best opportunity, the best time to lavish him with a four-year deal, but man, on the court, it was so beautiful to watch. And I think they kind of got caught up in, man, we're just one step away. If we can just bring it together and he doesn't get hurt like he got hurt in the sixth or seventh game.
Yeah, end of game five.
Win it.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. So I can see the temptation of trying to keep it together. They gambled, and it just hasn't worked out.
I just look at how the NBA, and we'll talk big market and small market teams later on, but when teams try to get creative and try to put together a team, I just don't know how out of the box the Houston Rockets thought. They thought to themselves, all right, well, we'll let Trevor Ariza go in free agency. We'll sign Chris Paul to his big deal. And then all of a sudden you end up swinging a way to bring Carmelo Anthony in. And it's not going back to Melo. Trust me, I'm not piling and putting this on Carmelo Anthony. It's the point that the Houston Rockets felt that this was their way to get over the top. And when you're seeing a flashing red light over Carmelo, there was one over Chris Paul as well, that we were all saying that when in 3 years you're going to be paying this guy $40 million just for the chance at this one championship. And now what you've effectively done is maybe wasted James Harden's effectiveness throughout the next couple of years, because you're hamstrung, pardon the pun, mm-hmm. by the contract of Chris Paul and his health. There's no reason to believe that Chris Paul is going to stay healthy through a possible playoff run that will be a dogfight every single round. Like, you're not the number one seed anymore. You're fighting for a playoff spot, and if you make the postseason, you're going to have a dogfight in the first round, in the Western Conference semis, then to the conference finals, and if they're fortunate enough, to the NBA finals. And I don't think Chris Paul can handle that load at where he is right now.
Yeah, like, so – It will be interesting to watch how they elect to go about this, because we can talk about this being a serious situation, but we haven't even got to Christmas yet. We're not to the All-Star break. They got plenty of time to kind of right the wrong. I think the big thing, if you're Houston, you want to make sure that as much as you can, you want to make sure that you get Chris Paul fully healthy. You want to manage his minutes, and you really want to put him in the best position that if you get into the tournament, he can do damage. And so they got to be really, really careful with how they manage the situation, even though it looks like they're really fighting for a playoff spot right now.
That West, last year how it was log-jammed between 3 and 9 with the teams, it's log-jammed right now between about 7 and the second lowest spot. You've got 2.5 games separating all of those teams from the 7th mm-hmm. seed to what would be the 14th seed, in essence, in the Western Conference.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We'll see if there'll be some touchdowns scored in the Holiday Bowl. Normally, the Holiday Bowl has that tradition of being a wacky affair. This year's version can be seen on Fox Sports 1 on New Year's Eve as Northwestern takes on the Utah Utes. Joining us now on the Doug Gottlieb Show, he's the head coach of that Utes football program. Kyle Whittingham joins us. Coach, Merry Christmas. Thanks so much for coming on today.
Hey, thank you, and same to you guys. Appreciate it.
Let's start with recruiting, because you had early signing day earlier this week. I know you brought in and were able to get some guys signing their national letters of intent. How different is it now with an early signing period for you in college football?
It's a lot different, and you know, it's second time through the process, so it was a little smoother this year than last year. But I think the trend is going to continue to be the vast majority of signees are going to sign early. And then it's just really cleanup work after that. You know, I think the days of the big build up to signing day in February are over, and you know, that's actually kind of an anticlimactic day. And then you know, the early signing day is going to be the one that everyone pays attention to.
You know, Coach, so with that in mind, knowing that, you know, you have the early period that we had this week, and then you have another opportunity to sign players in February, how do you change your focus? Do you now kind of go back and revisit your board and some of the guys that may have fallen through the cracks? You now kind of ramp up your interest and attention towards them. What is the process that you guys are used to kind of fill the holes that you have to fill in the class?
Yeah, well, exactly that. We determine who's left, you know, who hasn't signed yet, and you know, we have some guys that have committed to us that opted to sign on the second signing period for whatever reason, and family reasons or whatever. So I'm sure everybody in the country had a few of those. But yeah, now it's a matter of sifting through who hasn't signed yet and who's still available. And, you know, obviously we got only a handful of scholarships left ourselves. And so it's just a matter of finishing off the class and addressing those final needs that weren't met the first time around.
Joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show, Kyle Whittingham, head football coach at Utah. You guys are 8 years in now to the Pac-12. You made your first conference championship game, and even though you didn't come out victorious, you're still playing in a darn good bowl game in the Holiday Bowl. What has been the toughest part? There are very few coaches that are in your spot, Coach, that can understand what it's like to be going from a Group of Five conference to a Power Five. You and Gary Patterson at TCU, I think, the only ones that can really do it. With all this talk about UCF and where they should be, looking back at the 8 years, what was the toughest transition to move from where you guys were in the Mountain West to the Pac-12?
Well, probably everything.
Really?
It was, you know, the bar was raised in every area. That was a that's a huge move for a football team to go from you know, group of five to power five. There's just no way around it. There's so many things to it. Now, it will start with the depth of your roster. I think that is the starting point. We felt really good about our first 22 coming in, you know, when we first joined the Pac-12, but there was a drop-off, you know, after that, and you get a few guys hurt during the season, and it really took its toll. And so job one was upgrading the roster, and it's still a work in progress. I mean, we're 8 years in, and I think we're deeper and more talented than we've ever been since we've been in the Pac-12, but we're still looking, you know, we're still a few players short depth-wise at certain positions, but that's the number one job. Facilities, you know, we had to upgrade facilities. We got a brand new building right when we joined the Pac-12. It was about a year or two into that where we moved into a new facility that was on par with the rest of the league. Budget, you know, you got to get your budgets up and so you can compete, you know, and have the money to, you know, recruit the right way and that type of thing. We're expanding our stadium. That should be done in a couple years here. That's going to be a nice expansion and a real finishing off of that stadium that we have right now, which is a, you know, we've sold out 58 straight games, so we're getting great support from our fans, but we need a bigger stadium, and so that's in the works as well. Coaches, you know, you got to make sure you get coaches that have experience and you know, you know, there's not really any opportunity for a guy with no experience to join, you know, join a P5 sure. staff. That's an exception to the rule. That doesn't happen very often at all. Whereas, you know, when we were in the Mountain West, you know, that happened quite frequently. You know, you get guys that were, you know, coming from maybe a grad assistant spot and joining your staff. So every area the bar was raised. And it's still a, you know, it's a race. It's an arms race, and I don't think anybody is sitting there saying, "Hey, this is exactly where we need to be." You know, as far as any program, everyone's always trying to get better, and everybody's a moving target.
You know, Coach, one of the things that has changed recently has been, like, we've always been excited about going to bowl games because you get the extra weeks to prepare and develop your young guys. But now with the redshirt rule, where guys can play four games and still retain that extra year eligibility, how does the redshirt rule and the added weeks of playing in a bowl help you get prepared for 2019?
Well, first of all, I think the rule was a huge positive, and I think that was something that one of the best rule changes that has occurred in the last several years. We felt like we took pretty good advantage of it, you know, and we monitored closely every week. You know, we had the redshirt list up there in staff meeting, the redshirt candidates, and making sure we're tracking their participation and how many games they were in. And as we got towards the end of the season, you know, it was a little bit of a unknown because we weren't positive we were going to be in that championship game, the Pac-12 championship game, and so you got a budget for that. And so it came out where we were able to redshirt, you know, 8 to 10 guys and but still get them game experience, and most of those guys have one game left, which was saved for the bowl game, which will be, you know, in a week and a half here. And so I think it was a very positive move, and I don't think you'll find a coach in the country that will disagree with that. I think everybody's excited about that, and it lets you have the opportunity, you know, as the season wears on, when guys get banged up, to, you know, guys that still have not reached that five-game threshold, which is the point of no return. You know, once you get to five, then you cannot utilize the redshirt year. And so it was a big help on special teams, you know, as you lost a few guys here and there, getting those guys that hadn't played yet an opportunity to help you out on special teams.
Kyle Whittingham, head coach of the Utah Utes, joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show. He's Bucky Brooks. I'm Dan Beyer. We talked about the changes to the Pac-12. We talked about the early signing period. Is there a change with college football quarterbacks and transferring? I know within your program you had a kid who transferred out, but it's been such a topic of conversation, whether it be Justin Fields at Georgia or whether it be the talk around Jalen Hurts at Alabama. Is this something new to college football? Is this something that new that coaches have to deal with? And if so, why is that?
Well, you've always had to deal with quarterback transfers in the past, and that's the most prevalent position that at least in our experience is the quarterback, as far as, you know, because you only can play one at a time, and there's you know, the kids that are younger see the writing on the wall early that, hey, I'm going to have to wait X amount of years to have a shot, and they get a little impatient. But in years past, you obviously had to have the approval and go through the process, you know, getting the coaches to release you and that type of thing. Now that it's just automatic and you can put yourself in that transfer portal without seeking permission, then that's changed. That's been a game changer, and I think you're going to see, and in fact, I know you're seeing right now more and more transfers. I don't think it's an epidemic. I don't think it's out of control, but it certainly has increased the numbers, and particularly at quarterback.
Do you have to change anything differently that you do?
Yeah, you got to be in tune with your players and you know what they're thinking and try to stay ahead of the game and not let something catch you by surprise. Although that's probably impossible to guard against entirely, but you know, it's good to, you have to be aware of potential guys that maybe you've got that look in their eye that hey, you know, I'm wondering what my role is here, and you know, you don't want to be caught shorthanded, especially a quarterback. And so, it's a situation where if you do lose a guy to transfer, most likely you're going to try to find a guy that's transferring from somewhere else. And so you got to scramble and try to make sure you keep your quarterback numbers up. And like I said, you can't get caught short of that position. It's way too important.
You know, Coach, one of the things that comes with having a very, very successful program is you have people kind of raid your coaching staff because you have good guys and they elevate guys. So you had a coach in Troy Taylor who was named head coach at Sacramento State. You had another linebacker coach that was appointed defensive coordinator. When you're a head coach and you obviously want your assistants to kind of maximize who they can be and what their career aspirations are, how do you manage the turnover that can take place on your staff when it kind of happens at this time of year?
Well, you've always got to have a short list, you know, that you keep as far as, you know, if this happens, you know, if I lose guys, you know, who are the guys that I'm going to, you know, go to and interview and be in that, you know, the replacements that you're looking at. And you're right, you know, when you do have success, there's more of a chance of losing guys. And the guys we lost this year, I think Gary Anderson went back to becoming a head coach at Utah State, which was, you know, certainly a good move for him. And Justin Enna, who was our linebacker coach, had a chance to go with Gary and be a coordinator, run the defense himself. And Troy Taylor was made a very attractive offer by Sac State as far as length of contract and salary. I mean, it's home for him. So you got to be prepared for it. And it's going to happen most years. Now, we were fortunate last year. We didn't lose anybody. We had all nine guys stay, and we were able to add the 10th coach that the NC2A had allowed for last year. And this year we had a pretty good season, and we've lost three coaches, and so that's just how it goes. But you got to have, I think the bottom line is you got to be anticipating that and don't let it catch you by surprise, kind of like the quarterback situation, and have a short list of guys that you think would be a good fit for your program.
Just a couple of more minutes with Utah head coach Kyle Whittingham joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. So does this Holiday Bowl match up with Northwestern, does this wrap up 2018, or does this start 2019 for you guys? Because I know there are a lot of Ute fans that are looking forward to next year. And I think you even said it, you said in the fall, maybe at Pac-12 Media Days, how you felt that your team right now, this was maybe the first legitimate team. You got a lot of young guys. You're only going to be graduating a few seniors. Does this wrap up 2018, or does this vault ahead to 2019?
I would say a little of both. I think that's a mixed bag. I think it's, obviously for the record, I mean, this is the last game of this season that's going to go on your record, but it's also a springboard into next season, into spring ball, to finish off your recruiting. And so I think it's twofold. I think it affects both ends, the season that's ending and the season coming up. We felt going into the fall that we had a chance to be pretty good this year, and the team was really, we only have 11 scholarship seniors, so it was really built for 2019. But then, you know, things can catch you off guard. I mean, if you have juniors that declare, I mean, we've got, you know, several juniors that are weighing their options of coming out. So the complexion of your team can change in a big hurry, but right now we feel like we're in a pretty good position. And again, it all boils down and comes back to recruiting. That's the most important thing we do on a daily basis, and it's the most important thing that you can do for the success of your program. So as long as we continue to recruit the right way and bring the right kids in here, I think we'll have a chance.
We'll wrap up with this. You had to feel pretty good when Mike Leach picked you as the coach that would probably win the Pac-12 Battle Royal, right? I mean, it kind of had to make you feel a little good, you know, that he named your name, right?
Well, I think Mike is just stirring the pot. I just think he wants to rile some people up and see if we can get a cage match lined up or something. But he's a good friend of mine. He's one of the most entertaining guys you'll ever come across. And I'm sure he gave it a lot of thought because he gives everything a lot of thought. You know, he's a deep thinker. So, but I think maybe his main impetus would be, hey, let's see if we can rile things up a little bit here.
Yeah, he said Witt and Herm were his two finals. That you could see at SummerSlam coming up this fall. We appreciate it, Coach. Good luck on New Year's Eve against Northwestern. We'll see the game on Fox Sports 1. And, yeah, best of luck with everything else.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Joining us now, 12 years in the National Football League, and now a teammate of Bucky's, not only domestically here in the United States, but also overseas, Will Blackman joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. Hey, Will, welcome to the show.
Yeah, not just domestic, but global.
Internationally known, listen, Will Blackman.
Listen, Bucky was in the front. He had champagne and strawberries and everything. I said, man, I wish I sat next to him.
I hope you don't mind me saying this. I asked him off the air. I go, because, and for the listener that don't know, Bucky just spent 3 weeks in London doing some stuff for Sky Sports and the NFL, and Will joined him over there about a week or so ago as well doing some NFL stuff. So I asked Bucky, I said, so what do they do? Just put you up in a hotel? And he's like, they got a place for me. You know, they got a spot for him set up, ready to go. That's how they do it.
Listen, he's quiet, but he's very high maintenance. You know.
we've been looking over these Week 16 matchups, drooling on some of the great games that we're going to see. Sunday night, the Chiefs take on the Seattle Seahawks. I'm concerned about one thing, and it has nothing to do with the Kansas City football team. I'm concerned about how everybody is concerned about Kansas City coming off of their loss to the Chargers a week ago. Are you concerned about where the Chiefs are just a couple of weeks outside the playoffs?
The only thing I'm concerned with this team is that it's on primetime, and that's been the issue. You know, they played against the Pats, lost in primetime. The Rams lost. Chargers lost. They all lost in primetime. Now, Pat Mahomes has played really, really well. I mean, the first game, you know, threw for over 350 against the Patriots, four TDs, but they lost. Rams hit them for almost 500, six TDs, lost. Same thing, Chargers, almost 250, two TDs, and like 70% loss. So I'm just concerned that they're on prime time. And why this makes me nervous is because, you know, say they lose and they end up getting a lower seed and then they have to go on the road. And these are like similar to playoff games, you know what I mean? So that's the only thing that's concerning to me.
You know, it's funny. So you're talking about being worried about Kansas City going on the road. My concern is right here in L.A. with the Chargers taking on this old school high school offense in Baltimore led by Lamar Jackson. Talk about the Chargers and the challenge of taking on a run-heavy attack in the National Football League when you don't normally see these kind of option attacks.
Oh yeah, it's almost like they're playing against Navy, right? it's basically the same thing. Yeah, because especially within the last, since I think week 11 when like him and Gus Edwards took over, Lamar Jackson, it's been crazy. What's funny is too, Lamar he's actually getting more carries a game than Melvin Gordon is. I think Lamar's, yeah, it's crazy, right? Lamar's getting like 17, Melvin's getting almost like 15 carries per game, but yeah, so in the Chargers, and they're actually a top 10 run defense, but in two of their losses, they actually have given up over 100 yards to the two losses they had to the Chiefs and the Rams. So, yeah, because now you really have to be assignment disciplined with this. And those are the teams I hated playing against were like those like Army teams or the Navy teams. Like, you really had to be assignment. There was no kind of, This is the game. I took off my shield. I didn't dress pretty. I put in my mouthpiece, eye black, some smell of stuff. I was like, okay, this is gonna be a game where we're banging, dude. You know what I mean? So that's what it's gonna be this week. It's gonna be a ugly game, one between the trenches. So that's the difficult part for the Chargers this week for sure.
Will Blackman of the NFL Network joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. He's Bucky Brooks. I'm Dan Beyer in for Doug. Will played 12 years in the NFL. Did you ever have to play Saturday games?
I never played on a Saturday that I can think of, but I did play in those awkward Thursday games.
Okay.
Actually, no. I take that back. Did I play Saturday? I think so. I think we played the Bears on a Saturday.
I'm going to guess then by your answer that Saturday is got to be pretty much like a Sunday situation as opposed to where a Monday game or a Thursday game would be different. Is that correct in preparation-wise?
You know what? when I played, I was just a zombie. I just looked at the schedule and however it was, that's what it was. So if we played on a Thursday night, then Sunday was like a Monday, and it was just crazy.
Fair enough.
So yeah.
Yeah, Will Blackman joining That's us funny. Here. Will the zombie Blackman joining us here on
the
Fox
zombie.
Sports Radio. Jared Goff's looked like a zombie the last 3 days, or the last three games or so. How concerned are you with him in the way that the Rams have been going as of late?
I think it's just what happened with the Eagles. I feel like they already had, they were a step ahead of everybody because they have played against Sean McVay. In the NFC East mm-hmm. when he was there. So they had all his notes already. The concerning thing is, the health of Todd Gurley. Because, if you have an excellent run game, then you can do whatever you want. That's been their benefit. So my thing is, I hope that Goff doesn't become, this is a negative, but a little Kirk Cousin-ish, where if things don't work out in your favor, meaning if the play breaks down, like, what can you do after the fact? Todd Gurley's he's not doing well. He's not running the ball well. Okay, they're having really sticky coverage. Okay, maybe your offensive line is getting beat up. How do you regroup? How do you become the leader where it's like, you know what? I'm just going to take over this game. I'm going to figure it out. Because there were a couple of throws where he was like, like, here, you can have it. Like, I don't even want the ball. And so that's the concerning thing for me is, can he rise to the level where, he's played him in games. He's a playoff quarterback. He's been in this situation. So what happens if the run game's not going well? What are they going to do? What is he going to do? Not so much, is Sean McVay, enough of Sean McVay trying to bail everybody out. Yes, amazing coach, good friend of mine. But it's time for Goff to really rise above everything else and really get this done. You see it across with Nick Foles. It's almost like that. Almost like Doug Peterson doesn't have to even call anything because Nick Foles just knows exactly what to do. Just like that little soundbite we got in the Super Bowl. Hey, let's run this. He's like, all right, we're going to run for these sessions. That's crazy though, right?
It is crazy, but I kind of want to go back to the Sean McVay thing because one thing that stood out to me in the game, I felt like there was a moment in the game where the camera panned over to Sean McVay and it looked like he didn't have any answers. And it's the first time that I ever can recall him looking like, I can't really figure out what's going on. Based on what you know about him, based on how much success that he has had, this is kind of the biggest hurdle that he's ever had to deal with. How do you expect him to handle this going forward?
Well, Buck, that's my point, though. You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, he has the game plan, and usually the game plan is down to a T, like this is what we're going to do. And, okay, now it's like, yo, Goff, my game plan is getting jacked up right now. Like, what's up? What are we going to do? And it's funny, they panned to him actually after the fumbled punt. And mm-hmm. he's like, oh my gosh, that killed my drive to go and win this game. So usually, when the teams I've been on, if it's almost like the best teams are above the X's and O's. It's like, yes, we could have the game plan. We had the game plan, but it's like, okay, if they're whooping us right now, if they're all over us, it's time for our guys to really dig deep and rise above the X's and O's. So that's kind of like what I saw in that situation right there. And that's what I meant by like, okay, Goff, it's time for you to like for real just take over this team when things aren't going well for anyone. The run game's not going well. Coach McVay's plan's not going well. So it's time for him to take over. And that's the next step. That's what's going to get them to the promised land. That's what's going to help them win the Super Bowl.
Will Black.
That's what's going to help them keep my prediction. Let's go, Rams.
Will Blackman joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. He's Bucky Brooks. I'm Dan Beyer in for Doug Gottlieb. So where would you put Ben Roethlisberger in terms of current era quarterbacks that you faced in the National Football League? Yeah.
What does that mean by current era?
Well, let's just say guys who have played within the last 15 years or so.
Oh, 15 years?
Yeah.
I mean, he's in that conversation, of course. Yeah.
You would have him top. I don't want to go Cam Jordan on you, but is he a Hall of Famer? Is he top five? Do you put him up there in the same category as a Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Tom Brady sort of thing? Where do you put Ben Roethlisberger?
I think he's been extremely consistent. Just to be a quarterback of one team for that long and to have multiple Super Bowls, I feel like if he gets in the Hall of Fame, Eli gets in the Hall of Fame. If Eli gets in the Hall of Fame, he gets in the Hall of Fame.
Oh boy.
No, you can say what you, you can say what you want. It's but they're tier. I feel like he's tier two. He's not. He's not there with Tom or Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers in terms of like that. And that in terms of playing a quarterback position like that. But he's tier two. He's gonna get it. I'm not worried about it.
Wow, man, we just giving out. Passes to the Hall of Fame club. Anybody and everybody.
Listen,
everybody's dancing. Everybody's dancing.
Why, Buck? Why can't he get in?
I mean, so like based on the way Cam framed that in terms of his era. Look, I get that he's won two Super Bowls, but if you go back and look at that first Super Bowl, Pittsburgh had a top one or two defense in like five or six of the first few years where he started. The Super Bowl that they won in Arizona, look, he was beginning to take over the team and do those kind of things. Like, I get Big Ben, but of all those other quarterbacks, and now they all won't retire at the same time, but I think Cam made a nice case when you talk about Brady, Breeze, Rodgers, he threw in Peyton Manning. Like, I mean, Phillip Rivers, I mean, he's okay. Like, Ben is okay, but I'm just not in love with him as a lock Hall of Famer.
Well, I didn't say he was first ballot.
I mean, this man, you still
want to know what the problem with it was that
he might go to Hall of Fame in a walker.
The problem with it was that all of a sudden you're bringing in Phillip Rivers and Eli Manning. While Eli Manning gets in because of the two Super Bowls, in the conversation was like you're putting Phillip Rivers in because of his numbers. And now with Ben is you can't use one argument and then use the other both against Ben, because I will say this, Ben stunk in Super Bowl 40. He wasn't, and he never got in the end zone, by the way. As a Seahawk fan, I'm telling you, he didn't get the end zone. We know about the awful calls. The point is, at least in the latter part of his career, the numbers that he has put up may have overshadowed or at least have counteracted what he did. I don't think that there's any doubt that he's in the Hall of Fame. Mm. And actually, when it gets to the question, I think five's about right. Yeah, I'd put Brady ahead of him. Yeah, I'd put Breeze ahead of him. But when you look at it as a whole, what they've done offensively over the last 5 years is really been impressive. And I know it's Lev Bell is Bucky likes, but to doubt that, and Cam Jordan only sees him once every 4 years. That's another thing where, like, I get if you're facing a guy twice a year, you get more of a feel. And I'm not a huge Big Ben fan. I just think in this case that he was being treated.
Well, this is kind of like my deal. Is everyone is the conversation like, hey, is Frank Gore going to get in the Hall of Fame? Yeah, based on what he has done, he rightfully so deserves to be in there. Like, well, he hasn't had whatever they want to say. And I put him in a conversation, well, Curtis Martin got in. You know, if Curtis Martin got in for all his numbers, that he should get in. And I also look at, now, obviously, this is it's a little different, but I look at Kurt Warner. You know, same thing. But he does have an MVP. He does have a regular season MVP, but if Kurt Warner's in there, you know, for what he's done and his limited amount of time, he's won a Super Bowl, MVP, put up great numbers, and I put him in that same conversation. If he got in, then Ben should get in too. So that's kind of like my argument in that regard. But go ahead, Buck.
I like your club. Like, if it's a New Year's Eve party, I want tickets to your spot because you let everybody in. We all in. Everybody's in.
Listen.
Everybody's in. Will Blackman's hosting the party tonight at the Hall of Fame. Everybody's in. Bring a stat or two, and you too can get in.
Listen, I respect the game. That's what's going on.
He's Will Blackman, 12-year NFL vet, now teaming up with the NFL Network. Find him on Twitter at Will Blackman. Will, we appreciate it. Have a great Christmas and enjoy Week 16.
No, I appreciate it. Anytime.